It is Monday, January 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Syrian peace talks begin in Kazakhstan.
They were brokered by Russia, Turkey, and Iran. Previous talks were under the United Nations and involved the United States as well.
The new Trump administration clashes with the news media, and the country music band Lady Antebellum releases a new album. It's all ahead. Syrian government and opposition delegates gathered Monday in Kazakhstan's capital for peace talks backed by Russia and Turkey that rebel sources said would not include direct negotiations. I spoke with VOA correspondent Daniel Scharf, who's covering the talks in Astana. I asked him what's different about this gathering, which follows previous ceasefire attempts that have failed.
Well, I guess the biggest difference was how these talks were organized. They were brokered by Russia, Turkey, and Iran. Previous talks were under the United Nations and involved the United States as well. The UN did send its Syria envoy, special envoy on Syria, Stefan de Mistura, but the United States did not send a delegation. President Trump's administration decided, according to the State Department spokesman, that because they are busy with the transition taking place, they would not send a delegation. But the U.S. ambassador is attending as an observer. That's the U.S. ambassador to Kazakhstan, who's based here in Astana. So there is still some U.S. participation. There is still some U.N. participation. But the organizers, the brokers, the guys who convinced both the rebel side and the government side to sit down at the same table, at least for the opening of the talks, that was Russia, Turkey, and Iran. So that was the big difference in how these talks were organized. But of course, many things have also happened since the last round of negotiations were attempted in Geneva. We had the fall of Aleppo to the Syrian government forces. That was a very big strategic win for Damascus. It gave the rebels a lot fewer options. And of course, it changed the situation on the ground. So the rebels groups were more interested. Some were more interested in negotiating. And it also hardened some of the views of those who believe that negotiating was not really an option. So we've seen some infighting between rebel groups. There's nothing new about infighting, but it has meant that some groups have stayed away from the talks. We also have a difference in that the rebel delegation, the opposition that's here in Astana, are representative of some of the actual fighter groups on the ground rather than some of the political faces that we saw in previous negotiations.
Yeah, apparently the High Negotiations Committee was not invited to Astana.
Yeah, that's correct. The committee itself was not invited, although the head of the delegation for the opposition, the rebels here, is a member of the committee, but they themselves were not invited to represent the rebels as an umbrella organization, as the political face of those fighting against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. So they have endorsed at the same time the talks and said that, you know, they hope that there is progress in the talks. But there's also been some concern expressed by members, different opposition groups, that these talks could be used to try and split the rebels, to try and force a political solution that not everybody agrees to, and to also put Russia and Iran really in the driving seat. And of course, those two of the three brokers, Russia and Iran, are supporters of President Assad. Turkey does not support Assad, but there has been a warming of relations between Russia and Turkey, because Turkey's wanting to get Russia support and see more action, more pressure being put on the Kurdish rebels who are fighting against Turkey and also fighting inside Syria. So it's been an interesting change in the dynamics of the negotiations that have been happening. Whether or not that's going to really produce any progress or real momentum forward is the big question.
That's VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf reporting from Astana, Kazakhstan. And joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug.
Sarah.
What is going on in the world of social media? I can't imagine what.
You know, as you well know, social media at times can be sober and serious, and at times it can be silly and sarcastic. And I don't know why I'm being so alliterative, but I think over Friday, Saturday, Sunday, with the inauguration on Friday and the Women's March, the various marches here in the United States and in other places around the country, there were Instagram and Facebook and Twitter were just flooded with, I think, you know, people just very seriously tweeting out moments that they were experiencing. You saw a lot of, you know, this is what I'm seeing wherever I am, and a little less so of the, and this is what my opinion on it is, more just, here's some history happening, take a look at it. Well, today, I guess, is our sarcastic day. As you, I think you will probably be addressing a little bit later in our program, the new incoming press secretary, Sean Spicer, late on Saturday, held a, well, I won't call it really a press conference. He gave a statement from the podium. He took no questions. It was, I think, people have said somewhat aggressive toward the media. That's not a characterization that I'm just pulling out of thin air, and various news organizations, journalists, not columnists and commentators, have been saying, look, Mr. Spicer just lied. Essentially what's happened here is the internet, and particularly Twitter, have developed a couple hashtags around which people are just being, I think, kind of mean and sarcastic. Either hashtag Sean Spicer says or hashtag Spicer facts, and people tweeting out things like, quote unquote, the lying media does not mention the 1 million invisibility cloaks issued to the crowd on Inauguration Day, hashtag Spicer facts. Let's see. Donald Trump was the first person to walk on the moon, despite what the dishonest media claims, hashtag Spicer facts. Of course, Donald Trump went back in time and killed Hitler with his bare hands. The crooked media just won't cover it, Sean Spicer says, hashtag. So there's a lot of people out there just, I think, kind of giving him a little stick, but it even if it's silly and it's sarcastic and it's obviously very one-sided, it does suggest that, at least for the moment, there may be a new tone in Washington in terms of how this administration gets along with the press. It's always an adversarial relationship, but every administration I can remember and those that I've covered, going all the way back to Ronald Reagan, you know, nobody comes out and just says, you're all liars. I mean, everybody tries to cultivate a working relationship. We're going to be working with each other for 4 years. You know, let's not try and make it as unpleasant as possible. But who knows? We'll just have to see how things go here.
Yeah, particularly this early in an administration.
Exactly.
The first day.
And over such a matter that was really so small and petty. So it's just a kind of a curious thing.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Donald Trump withdraws the United States from the 12-nation Pacific Rim trade deal. A Senate committee will vote on the President Trump's nominee to be Secretary of State. The new leader of Gambia wants a truth commission on the years of former President Jammeh. And the Prime Minister of Mauritius hands over the office to his son. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Systems that prevent computers from being accessed by unauthorized users are becoming quite sophisticated. Among the tools being used to protect computers and valuable data include complex passwords, voice recognition, smart cards, as well as fingerprint, iris, and retina scans. Now, a group of researchers at the State University of New York at Binghamton have come up with a unique new way to protect electronic health records: the patient's own heartbeat. The patient's own electrocardiograph, or ECG, which measures the electrical activity of the heart with a biosensor attached to the skin, is what is used to actually encrypt the confidential data. Since a person's ECG may change at times due to factors such as age, illness, or injury, the researchers say that they are working on ways to take these changes into consideration. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the country music group Lady Antebellum releases a new single. Throughout Donald Trump's campaign for president, there were moments when he and the news media were at odds. That appears to be continuing now that he's become president. Over the weekend, Trump blamed the media for his feud with the intelligence community, and his press secretary lashed out at the media. And his White House counselor, Kellyanne Conway, referred to alternative truths. International Edition's Lori London asked Kathleen Culver, director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, about the level of concern among journalists tasked with covering the president.
I do think that a number of journalists, particularly the White House Correspondents Association, did express concerns throughout the Obama administration about matters of access and transparency. I think President Obama has been quite skilled at using his own channels to reach the public and not relying solely on news media. I'm not sure that that's something that's particularly because he is Barack Obama, but because new tools and new strategies have developed during his time in office. I think part of what has people concerned now is Donald Trump's very open, very apparent hostility toward the news media and his use of those themes on the campaign trail to gin up his own supporters.
There was a CNN reporter that was told he was not getting a question because there were some concerns over reports that CNN had done. Is that the beginning of suppression?
I think it's virtually impossible to predict whether that is the beginning of suppression, but across the board, I have found Donald Trump very difficult to predict. I will say this about President Trump. He knows how to work all sorts of different media channels, including the news media, but he definitely needs them. He needs that mix. He needs coverage, and he's very savvy about how to use it to his greatest advantage.
What about the potential to move the White House press corps from where it is now and down the block from the White House? Does that matter, or can the press continue to do its job just as well?
Part of the reason that you want to be close to the West Wing is that you have access not just to the president or the press secretary, but you see what's going on. You see people in the halls, that sort of thing. So moving them away would be not just symbolic. I do think it would have effects. But that's not to say that the news media have to be in that room or in that press room to be able to do their job. In fact, if they see themselves as only operating from that location, then we all have a problem. We need much more dogged reporting outside of the White House to be able to really cover an administration and hold it accountable.
There's been a lot of talk about fake news. Is it important for journalists to report about fake news as far as an entity in and of itself? Is it fair that if someone says something isn't true, that makes it not true?
So the concept of fake news, quote unquote, is really important for us to pull apart. You saw Donald Trump, and I was astonished by this, call a CNN reporter, quote unquote, fake news. Some people may accuse CNN of bias, but it is certainly not fake news. So we should be specific. We should call something a hoax when it's a hoax. We should call it a conspiracy theory when it's a conspiracy theory. If we are criticizing it of bias, we should use that term. But we shouldn't just label everything fake news, because it allows people to sort of weaponize that term and use it to evade perfectly relevant and perfectly justifiable questions.
When the news that's coming out of any particular administration seems to be more negative than positive, is it a journalist's obligation to look for positive things to report to be in the so-called balance? Or would that, again, sort of be trying to shift the conversation away from what is truth?
So this is a really important concept, and that's the concept of false equivalence. And news media are justifiably accused of this fairly often. And it comes from an admirable instinct to be fair, but it's taking that fairness to too great an extent. So with global climate change, for instance, you know, we just had another record-setting Earth temperature. And with climate change, if you report it as some scientists believe humans are contributing to global climate warming, but other scientists don't, that's a false equivalence. It dramatically misrepresents the actual situation, which is that the vast, vast majority, approaching 100% of scientists, believe that climate change exists and that humans contribute to it. And so if you have this balance, well, one side thinks this and the other side thinks that, you have to actually make the balance itself fair. You're not being fair to both sides if you present both sides equally, when in reality they're not equal. The election would be a good example of where we could say that there was an equal split. We have real division in this country, and it's equal across these two candidates. You know, nobody walked away with sort of an impressive share of the votes. And so there you can have sort of a left-right balance, and that's a fair balance. But we shouldn't be in the business of saying A said X and B said Y, and therefore that's the truth. People can say things all the time that are incorrect. Either they're inaccurate or they're not placed in the proper context.
We've heard a lot about maybe the possibility of not having as many press conferences. Is it up to the president how much airtime he and his surrogates get?
Honestly, I believe it's the public that is trying to hold its government accountable. It's not the duty of the news media alone. Journalists aren't doing this because they want to ask questions at a press conference. They're doing it, in the best cases, in the public interest. And that's not to say journalism sometimes doesn't go wrong, sometimes does not have ethical problems. I would be nuts if I were to try to deny that there are ethical lapses in journalism at times. But journalists, when they are standing before Donald Trump and asking him questions or interviewing one of his surrogates on the morning news, they are surrogates for the public. They are there trying to demand accountability from our government in the public's name. Donald Trump doesn't govern the United States. Paul Ryan does not govern the United States. People who elect them govern this country. And we ought not lose sight of that. And the news media are a conduit between the people and those that they have elected to hold positions of power.
That's Kathleen Culver of the Center for Journalism Ethics at the University of Wisconsin. She spoke with VOA's Laura London. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
After a short hiatus, multiple Grammy-winning trio Lady Antebellum has released a new single, You Look Good. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the single is the first off their sixth studio album, Heartbreak, due out in June.
The Smash Country trio took a break from the road in 2015, but now Lady Antebellum is back with a new single, You Look Good. Singer Hillary Scott says the song came out of a time when they got back to their original way of doing things, being together, writing songs, and enjoying one another's friendship.
And we really, Dave says it great, got back to really the way we started. You know, we lived together for 2 months, pretty much, half of it in Florida, half of the other time we wrote and recorded in Los Angeles. And we just got to be 24/7 in each other's space again, creatively, as friends. Our families were around, kind of popping in and out. It was just back to the way that it was over 10 years ago. So, and that we had not had been able to do in a really long time.
Singer Charles Kelly says producer Mike Busby told the trio to concentrate on the material, and the creativity was overwhelming when they spent life together working, eating, drinking, and relaxing.
And, you know, a lot of that was just a function of, you know, as we toured and our families grew, it was harder and harder to write as much material to choose from, and we felt like, something about that break when we came back together and we were down in Florida specifically, all these ideas came out. I mean, I think we wrote half the record, the majority of half the record in three, 4 days when we were down in Florida. It was just this kind of inspired time.
Singer and guitarist Dave Haywood says having time to work with his old friends was key to the creative process.
Having time, again, I mean, to me that was the key word of the entire, you know, project was we have time on our side now, you know. And
Time together.
We literally lived in a house, rented a house in Florida and in L.A. together.
Dave cooked
lived.
For us.
I cooked as much as I could cook.
He made signature cocktails
All
for
kinds
us.
Of there craft
was,
cocktails.
There was a lot of drinks. My wife was like, seriously, we had to sit me down after that trip. It was like, all right, we got to talk. We got to cut back. It's time. No more summer camp.
It's my fault.
It was adult summer camp. It really was. It was L.A., and I was like, it's not my fault. Dave was making the drinks.
For the first single, You Look Good, Lady A has incorporated something that Hillary Scott has wanted for the past few albums, a horn section. Charles Kelly says the groove of You Look Good just made horns a natural fit.
You know, the bass riff is just so kind of gets you into that, like, kind of funk, you know, P-funk type of thing. And it was either Dave or Busby suggested, you know, let's add some horns. And it just made the whole dynamic of that track feel so much more exciting and fresh for us.
The band's new album, Heartbreak, comes out in June. Lady Antebellum will tour to support the record with 43 dates scheduled in North America. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Thanks very much, David. And that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. We have a range of stories there that might be of interest to you. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The human rights situation in North Korea remains abysmal. So says the most recent report sent by the U.S. State Department to the U.S. Congress. Indeed, the report states that serious human rights abuses committed by North Korea include extrajudicial killings, forced labor, torture, and prolonged arbitrary detention, as well as rape, forced abortions, and other sexual violence. Many of these abuses are committed in the country's political prison camps, which hold an estimated 80,000 to 120,000 prisoners, including children and family members of the accused. The government also maintains an extensive system of forced labor through its rigid controls over workers and restricts the exercise of freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, association, religion or belief, and movement. There is no independent media in North Korea. All media is strictly censored and no deviation from the official government line is tolerated. Authorities prohibit listening to foreign media broadcasts and take steps to jam foreign radio broadcasts. Various ministries are responsible for modifying television and radio equipment to prevent users from accessing material from overseas and other material deemed illegal by the government. Individuals accused of viewing foreign films are reportedly subject to imprisonment or even execution. This report also details the conduct of persons determined by the State Department to be responsible for the commission of serious human rights abuses or censorship in North Korea. Topping the list is Kim Won-hong, Minister of State Security. According to the 2014 UN Commission of Inquiry on Human Rights in North Korea report, the Ministry of State Security is implicated in widespread gross human rights violations. It administers the country's network of political prison camps, where according to defector testimony and satellite imagery, summary executions and torture are commonplace. Many others share responsibility for the horrific human rights abuses suffered by the North Korean people on a daily basis. With this latest report, the U.S. gives a voice to the voiceless and reminds the North Korean people that they are not alone and not forgotten.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.